Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Numbers chapter 36, the very last chapter in this particular book of Moses. Remember, it's the 40th year of the Exodus. It is the last few months of that year when Moses is trying to wrap up his leadership time. He knows that because of his own choices, he will soon be going to the top of the mountain that is east of the encampment of the Israelis, and he will then pass away, and the Israelis shortly after that will be led across the Jordan River by Joshua and into the Promised Land. So he's trying to pass on to them everything that God is telling him about what they need to be doing once they arrive in the Promised Land. Particularly right now, we're focused on the inheritance, how 9.5 of the tribes are going to actually be in the Promised Land proper. 2.5 of the tribes are going to remain on the eastern side of the Jordan and have their inheritance there. The Levites are going to be given cities, 48 of them, throughout all of the tribal areas. And this will allow them to be close by for consultation by the people of Israel. There are going to be 6 cities of refuge, 3 on the east side of the Jordan and 3 on the west side. These cities will always be within an easy day's travel from anywhere in the Promised Land. And anyone who kills someone, accidentally or on purpose, is going to be expected to go to those cities and make a defense for themselves and be judged as whether they are a murderer or a manslaughterer. If they're a murderer, they will be executed by the avenger of blood designated by the community where the murder took place. If they are determined to be guilty of accidental death, they still have to stay in the city of refuge for a period of time until the death of the high priest, because death is a bad thing. And there needs to be some sort of consideration of that. Now, the idea, I think, is that everyone will be more careful if they realize even an accidental death will disrupt your life and cause you to have to stay in the city of refuge until the death of the high priest. And all of us ought to be so concerned about other people's safety and life that we will bend over backwards to make sure that nothing untoward of our own actions causes trouble for somebody else. So chapter 36 is one last thing dealing with inheritance. We've already talked about these people before. This is just so that the next group of leaders remember that this was a promise made. Chapter 36, verse 1, the heads of the fathers' houses of the clan of the people of Gilead, the son of Machir, son of Manasseh, from the clans of the people in Joseph, came near and spoke before Moses, before the chiefs, the heads of the fathers' households of the people of Israel. They said, "He who is commanded my Lord to give the land for inheritance by lot to the people of Israel. And my Lord was commanded by He who is to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, to his daughters." Now that was because Zelophehad was on the first inheritance list at the beginning of the Exodus. But because of the tacked on time out that caused Zelophehad to be amongst those that died without going in and claiming the land, his name is not on the second list. And unfortunately, he had nothing but daughters, so he had no son to be on the second list at the end of the Exodus. So the daughters came and successfully convinced Moses, with God's direction, that daughters only of a man get to inherit the property. So now there needs to be some clarification to that. So here come these leaders asking this question. Verse 3. But if they are married to any of the sons of the other tribes of the people of Israel, then their inheritance will be taken from the inheritance of our fathers and added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry. So what if Zelophehad's daughters marry someone from another tribe? Well, their inheritance is going to pass down to their kids, who will be counted as members of that other tribe because of their dad's identity. So that's the objection, is our tribe, the Manasseh tribe, is going to be whittled out because of the Zelophehad rule. So it will be taken away from the lot of our inheritance. And when the jubilee of the people of Israel comes, then their inheritance will be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry, and their inheritance will be taken from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers. So Moses commanded the people of Israel according to the word of He Who Is, saying, "The tribe of the people of Joseph is right. This is what He Who Is commands concerning the daughters of Zelophehad. Let them marry whom they think best, only they shall marry within the clan of the tribe of their father." So the solution is, if you are a female, and the only female inheritor of your dad's property, you have to marry inside your tribe. The inheritance of the people of Israel shall not be transferred from one tribe to another, for every one of the people of Israel shall hold on to the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. And every daughter who possesses an inheritance in any tribe of the people of Israel shall be wife to the one of the clan of the tribe of his fathers, so that every one of the people of Israel may possess the inheritance of his fathers. So no inheritance shall be transferred from one tribe to another, for each of the tribes of the people of Israel shall hold on to its own inheritance. And that makes really good sense, because if you're going to have a regional tribe, then you don't want pockets of your tribe being transferred over to another tribe, either a neighboring tribe or a tribe that's clear across the country from you. That's not reasonable. So here's their solution. If you are the only daughters of a man and you know you're going to be the inheritor, you have to marry inside your tribe. So the daughters of Zelophehad did as He Who Is commanded Moses, for Mahla, Tirzah, Hogla, Milcah, and Noah. The daughters of Zelophehad were married to the sons of their father's brothers. They were married into the clan of the people of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, and their inheritance remained in the tribe of their father's clan. So problem solved. And then the wrap-up to the entire book, these are the commandments and the rules that He Who Is commanded through Moses to the people of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. And with that, we have now gone through four of the five books of Moses. Genesis as the background leading up to the Exodus, and then Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers as the historical books of the Exodus and the wilderness journeyings. That leaves us only one book left, Deuteronomy, which is a very important book. It is effectively a final address of Moses to the people of Israel before he goes up on the mountain and dies. So it's final words, and it is a review of historical things that have happened, and judgments that have come down, as well as warnings that you've got to take God seriously. You've got to live the holy lifestyle. The book of Deuteronomy is quoted quite a bit by Jewish people throughout time and in the New Testament. So let's begin in Deuteronomy 1, verse 1. These are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel beyond the Jordan in the wilderness, in the Arabah opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hazeroth, and Dizahab. Now, those places are somewhere on the eastern side of the Jordan River, opposite Jericho. Now, Paran is the name of another place to the south, but that's not the same Paran here, because it has to be somewhere in the plains of Moab where Moses is speaking this. A little historical note, it is 11 days' journey from Horeb, that's Mount Sinai, by the way of Mount Seir, that would be Edom, to Kadesh Barnea. And this should help us a little bit more to secure where Mount Sinai was at. And I've given you my suggestion. I think it has to be east of the Gulf of Aqaba somewhere. And it has to be somewhere on the road that goes out of Midian and across the top of the Gulf of Aqaba heading off to Egypt. So that effectively rules out the traditional site in the southern tip of the Sinai Peninsula. That site was identified by later Israelis and then passed on to the mother of Emperor Constantine, which would be Helena, who was a very serious Christian. But she's the one that really was respected by historians so much in identifying certain holy sites. And she just happened to be terribly wrong in this, because it's not possible if you follow the other clues. So this is another one of the clues, is somewhere on the east side of the Gulf of Aqaba, 11 days' journey, which probably includes one Sabbath day, to Kadesh Barnea, which in my estimation is where the modern little settlement of Paran is located, about 40-some miles south of the southern end of the ancient Sea of the Dead Sea, on the west side of the valley, and about 10-15 miles east of what is now called Petra. So that's my location of Kadesh Barnea. So 11 days journey, and that's a tough one to call there, because it could be 10 miles to a day with the Israelis. That's where Mount Sinai has to be. Okay, now we get to the timing for the giving of this address. Verse 3. In the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, that's when this address is going to be offered. And I think I've got here somewhere in my notes approximately when that would be. Let's see. Yeah, it would be somewhere toward the very beginning of January of 1416 BC. So, in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, Moses spoke to the people of Israel according to all that he who is had given him in commandment to them, after he had defeated Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived in Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth and in Edrei. So the defeating of the kings on the eastern side of the Jordan, the annexed territories, as we were calling them now. Beyond the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Moses undertook to explain this law, saying, now, because he's going over the law a second time, people who were involved in passing the study down through the centuries referred to this as Deuter, meaning second, Nomi, law. Deuteronomy, the second law. So it's the second recitation of the law. And that's how the book got its name in English. Here's what he says, starting at verse 6. He who is our God said to us in Horeb, you have stayed long enough at this mountain. Turn and take your journey and go to the hill country of the Amorites and to all their neighbors in the Arabah, in the hill country, and in the lowlands, in the Negeb, and by the seacoast, the land of the Canaanites, and Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, See, I've set the land before you. Go in and take possession of the land that he who is swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Jacob, to give to them and to their offspring after them. So Moses goes back to the second year of the Exodus, in the second month of that year, when God told him, all right, it's time to leave Sinai. You've been here long enough. You've been here for just a little under a year. It's time for you to head to Kadesh Barnea and prepare to go into the Promised Land. So that's where he starts his story, is the command to leave Mount Sinai. Verse number 9. At that time, I said to you, I am not able to bear you by myself. So we talked not too long ago in our history, but long ago by Moses telling this story, that Moses had a leadership meltdown right after they left Mount Sinai. And he was basically saying to God, I've had it. Why am I having to take care of these people? They're nothing but trouble. Just kill me and get it over with. And he apparently even expressed that to the people. I can't handle you guys on my own. He who is your God has multiplied you. Behold, you are today as numerous as the stars of heaven. May he who is the God of your fathers make you 1,000 times as many as you are and bless you as he's promised you. How can I bear by myself the weight and burden of you and your strife? Choose for your tribes wise, understanding, and experienced men, and I will appoint them as your heads. So this is when you see a new crew come to leadership at God's command. The Sanhedrin apparently changes to this new crew of the new generation. And it appears to me, and I shared with you as we were going through it, it appears to me that Moses also put into use his father-in-law's advice from a year previous, when his father-in-law saw him trying to take care of all the leadership by himself. He told Moses, if you do that, you're going to ruin yourself and them. What you need to do is you need to find good leaders first to be over a family of over 10 families, and then you need to have somebody on the next level that's going to be over 5 of those groups. And then above that, there's going to be somebody that's going to be over 100 of those groups. 50 of those groups, and then 100 of those groups, and then finally over 1,000, and just have these multiple layers, and let them resolve the issues at the lowest possible spot, closest to its origin spot. And then only Moses take on those things that pass through those multiple layers. It's an excellent way to set up a multi-tiered leadership and responsibility arrangement, and it helps spread everything out. So Moses is reminding them here in the book of Deuteronomy. He says, I told you guys at the time I needed help and that I needed them to tell me people to put in place. And so verse 14, you answered me. The thing that you've spoken is good for us to do. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and experienced men, set them over heads as heads over you, commanders of thousands, commanders of hundreds, commanders of 50s, commanders of 10s, and officers throughout your tribes. I charged your judges at that time, hear the cases between your brothers and judge righteously between a man and his brother or the alien who is with him. You shall not be partial in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not be intimidated by anyone, for the judgment is God's. And this is very important as a principle as well in law, in the way that we treat things inside the church and in our own relationships with other people. We should be like God and not be prejudiced. And we should not try to make our judgments based on our feelings. Justice is supposed to be blind. The same justice is given to everyone. The rich and the poor should be judged by the same standards. the people who have had bad cases previous should still be judged fairly in the current case. Because just because you did it some other time does not necessarily automatically mean you did it this time. And that's a very important principle of law. And so that's what Moses is passing on to these people, saying, you need to be fair every single time because that's the way God is. Then he continues in verse 17, the case that's too hard for you, you shall bring to me and I'll hear it. And effectively, he's saying any case that's too hard for the leader of 10 passes it to the group up above them. And then if they can't handle it, they bump it up. If they can't handle it, they bump it up. If they can't handle it, they bump it up. Until finally, Moses is the last resort. And if he can't handle it, he takes it to God. Verse 18, and I commanded you at that time all the things that you should do. Then we set out from Horeb, and we went through all that great and terrifying wilderness that you saw on the way to the hill country of the Amorites, as he who is our God commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea. And I said to you, you've come to the hill country of the Amorites, which he who is our God is giving us. See, he who is your God has set the land before you. Go up, take possession, as he who is the God of your fathers has told you. Do not fear or be dismayed. So they arrive at Kadesh Barnea, and Moses says, now we're going to get ready to go into the promised land. Then we get a little bit more detail here that Moses clues us in on as to what happened next. Verse 22, then all of you came near to me and said, let us send men before us that they may explore the land for us, and bring us word again of the way by which we must go up and the cities into which we shall come. So Moses now tells us, I didn't come up with the spy idea, you guys did. You told me, instead of just going straight into the promised land, let's check it out. Let's get information and plan. Verse 23, the thing seemed good to me. So he did agree, sounds like a good idea. And then he said, I took 12 men from you, one man from each tribe. They turned, they went up into the hill country, and they came to the valley of Eshcol and spied it out. Now, it wasn't just simply into the valley of Eshcol, which seems to be near Hebron. It seems that this group spent 40 days going all the way up past Dan, up past the Sea of Galilee to the entrance of Hamat, the northern border that we already talked about for Israel, and everything in between. They checked it all out, and then they came back to Hebron and the Valley of Eshcol, and then, verse 25, is what happened. They took in their hand some of the fruit of the land and brought it down to us and brought us word again and said, it's a good land that he who is our God is giving us. Yet, you would not go up, but rebelled against the command of he who is your God. Now, keep in mind, Moses is addressing people who were kids at the most when all of that happened. So they were not personally responsible for what their moms and dads and grandparents did at that time, but some of them were there and may have had the same attitude. Verse 27, and you murmured in your tents and said, because he who is hated us, he brought us out of the land of Egypt to give us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Where are we going up? Our brothers have made our hearts melt, saying the people are greater and taller than us. The cities are great and fortified up to the heaven. And besides, we've seen the sons of the Anakim there. So you remember that the majority report, the 10 spies, said, it's scary up there. Yeah, it's beautiful, but all the best places are taken up by people who live in these great big high-walled cities, and they're big, and even in certain places, there are giants. The land would eat us alive. And it scared everybody and caused them to rebel. And so Moses is going back through all that. Verse 29, "Then I said to you, don't be in dread or afraid of them. He who is your God, who goes before you, will himself fight for you, just as he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness, where you have seen how he who is your God carried you as a man carries his son, all the way that you went until you came to this place." So Moses tried to encourage them at the time, saying, look, God is the one who's taking care of you. He's carrying you like a little child. He will put you safely in the land if you will just trust him. Verse 32, "Yet in spite of this word, you did not believe he who is your God, who went before you in the way to seek you out a place to pitch your tents, in fire by night and in the cloud by day, to show you by what way you should go. And he who is heard your words and was angered, and he swore, not one of these men of this evil generation shall see the good land that I swore to give to your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and his children I will give the land on which he has trodden, because he has wholly followed he who is. Even with me, he who is was angry on your account and said, you shall not go in there." So Moses is still blaming them for getting him barred. "Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall enter. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. And as for your little ones, who you said would become prey, and your children who today have no knowledge of good or evil, they shall go in there. To them I'm going to give it, and they shall possess it. But as for you, turn and journey in the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea." So Moses is just retelling the story of how the 40 years wandering in the wilderness had that penalty addition that made it 40 years. And he's just wants them to get the story straight, because he's not going to be around any longer, and they're going to go into the Promised Land. And his big concern, which we will see quite a bit toward the end of this book, is you guys are going to make the same mistakes and get yourselves in trouble with God again.